The Canada convoy protest. There's a lot to get to, so let's look at the overview. First, we'll talk about key events and people. We'll briefly talk about the political and media spin that's been placed upon those key events and people, origins and organizers, participants, and then finally, some conclusions. Let's start with key events. And of course, first we need to understand what it is these people are supposed to be protesting. And so we'll look at vaccine mandates as well as passports. Ben Ditcher stated on Fox News, the Tucker Carlson show to be specific, that we quote, "We want to get rid of vaccine mandates and vaccine passports." And that passport, that's really the concerning one. So let's take a look at what he means by these, by that statement. What's true in that statement? What's not true? And let's delve into some of the granular details. So if we're going to start at the beginning, we actually start with policy in the United States. And this is going to be important for context to kind of zoom out, because really this is about Canada, Mexico, and the United States. So those three borders. Now, if we scroll down here, and this is a Homeland Security website, we see that the date is of October 12th, 2021. So this is well before, or at least a few months before, any of these convoys started happening. And what we see is a change in policy, right? Now, there's a few things that we need to point out from Homeland Security. This is a paragraph that's important. I won't read it, but I'll leave it here for a moment. But essentially what this is saying is that non-essential employees, non-essential workers are now able to cross the border. And again, this would be in the U.S. perspective, the southern border as well as the northern border, but this would affect Canada. And what we're saying here is that non-essential employees, people that aren't designated by the government or working within federal jurisdiction will be allowed to cross borders, but there's going to be rules based upon that, depending on which country you're in, and really the timeline, because these rules change. As a matter of fact, Canada loosened its restrictions in February. However, these could range from having to show proof of vaccination to accepting a quick antigen test. So it depends on which country and where you're at and where you're at in the timeline. But the important thing is that in October 12, 2021, Department of Homeland Security in the United States, and there are similar pages in the Canadian government and Mexican government websites as well that essentially say the same thing. Non-essential employees will be allowed to cross the border. Now, here's another important piece of this. And again, this is in October, this paragraph here. Second, beginning in early January 2022, and so this is when the convoy, let's call it, really kicked off, Department of Homeland Security will require that all inbound foreign national travelers crossing U.S. land or ferry ports of entry, POEs, whether for, and this is the important part, essential or non-essential reasons, be fully vaccinated. So this is really when you get to the heart of what this convoy protest is supposed to be about. It's really this policy. And in a way, this policy, in conjunction with the Mexican government, as well as the Canadian government, is loosening restrictions in that it's allowing non-essential workers to cross freely between the different countries, different rules, again, depending on the timeline and which country you're in. However, in conjunction with that loosening of rules is also this change in designation for essential reasons or essential workers. And that is what was protecting truckers or anybody, whether it be, via sea or air, what have you. Anybody that was working in a commercial or federally regulated economic sector had this protection as an essential employee to be able to waive essentially all the other rules that non-essential people had to follow, and that included vaccination. And here we have a website by or owned by the government of Canada. And this actually predates the Department of Homeland Security site that we were just looking at. This goes back into August of 2021 here. And so again, without reading all of this, what this is saying is a heads up that there's going to be policy coming down the road in which the government of Canada is going to require vaccination of the federal workforce. And an important piece of this is that it's not just the federal workforce, but it's essentially any type of commerce that is under the realm of federal regulation. And so transportation that might be crossing provincial lines within the country of Canada or over the border to the United States would fall under federal jurisdiction. So this is going back to August. There's not much here that's groundbreaking, except that it's just, you know, giving a heads up here. There's this section here that says, further, the government of Canada expects that Crown corporations and other employers in the federally regulated sector will also require vaccination for their employees. The government will work with these employers to ensure this result. And I'm assuming that this is where the truckers come in. Up above, it talks about some, you know, very specific things, such as commercial air travel, cruise ships, marine vessels, trains. And these are, it's not specifically calling out freight. However, I believe that this paragraph discussing how the government or corporations that work in conjunction with the government are going to work with employers to ensure the results, that this is most likely covering that sector. Okay, so we saw some websites. We saw a government website from the United States, and we saw a government website from Canada. And so, all right, but I mean, what changed, right? We saw some things about border crossings changing and about non-essential employees. Well, here's exactly what changed. As of January 15th, 2022, all truck drivers entering Canada, regardless of nationality, must be fully vaccinated and carry proof of their vaccination status using the Arrive Can app. Canada still considers truck drivers essential workers, but that status no longer exempts them from the Canadian vaccine mandate. So all those things that we looked at, from whether it was from the United States angle or the Canadian angle, those are actually restrictions that were lifted off of non-essential folks that were crossing the border, but wrapped up with those changes to allow non-essential folks was also this mandate for crossing the border. And prior to that, at least in Canada, what were considered essential employees had an exemption to those rules. And with this new set of rules that were coming in, which actually kind of freed up some things for non-essential people who are crossing the border, with that non-exempt status no longer provided a way for employees, at least these truck drivers, to say that, you know, I don't want to get vaccinated. They had to abide by all the same rules as everybody else crossing the border. Now, regarding a passport, there is no centralized passport. So some of the things that were stated earlier are accurate. There have been changes made to requirements for essential workers who were going back and forth over the border. That's true. And they did come into play in early 2022. So that's accurate. However, again, there is no central vaccine passport per se. Instead, it's up to each province to create their own. And this process started a while ago at this point. Some provinces already had this up and going. And the entire process is up to those regional local governments. The only instructions that came from a federal level were that whatever it is that these provinces created, it had to have like a same look and feel to it. It had to be somewhat standardized.
so that it would be recognizable for ports of entry and for provincial crossings. Okay, so now we have a background, at least an understanding of you know, what's accurate, what wasn't accurate, and where some of these grievances might lay, where they came from. This is the more important part, I think, is kind of an overview. Now we're going to look at some of the events, and really we'll go back to the summer of 2021, although things don't really pick up until around December of 2021. And it's an interesting exercise to look at some keywords or some names of main figures involved with this, do a search in whatever search engine that you like, and restrict the publishing date for that article or for that site. And so I did this. Going back to August, you might see a few things. September, a little. October, November, a little more, but still not much. It's really in December where you start seeing articles about this, in January where it kind of explodes all over mainstream media.
In that exercise in which I restricted search results from, I was using Google, I found this article, which was interesting. It's dated October 5th, 2021, so a few months before anything happened with the Freedom Convoy or Trucker Convoy, et cetera. And when we scroll down, it also, you know, this looks like a local, you know, kind of local site here. It's a Canadian site. But scrolling down, we see an image, and the image says, "Putting Unity in Community, Convoy for Freedom, Canada Unity." So this was an article about a truck convoy, right? And when we scroll down, there's not much. It talks about, you know, the date and the time. However, it does say this. It states the goal. And the goal is to end requirements for vaccine passports. So this is October, early October. I think this is important to know for a few reasons. One, that discussions of what was going to come in terms of a change in border policy for really Mexico, the United States, as well as Canada, that these were known ahead of time. This is also interesting because essentially this is like a prototype for the Freedom Convoy that was going to come a few months later. However, it was much smaller. I believe just a few hundred trucks. Something that's interesting here, when you try to jump onto their Facebook website, I'm not going to, but the Facebook website no longer exists. It just says that the no results are found. So I would be curious to know if this was in connection with what was to come, or if this was a separate convoy that did not want to be connected with the Freedom Convoy that happened later. And this just being an independent, it looks like a radio station website, that, you know, they didn't get that info and that they left this up. So following a link from that previous site, that radio station, I did find the Canada Unity webpage. It looks very basic. It looks like a 1990s style website. However, when we scroll down, there are names for Canada Unity Foundation. However, that's not really the part that's interesting down here, James and Sandra Bowder. What is interesting, if you track this, is when you go up here and you click on their new website. So they're kind of saying this is the old one. So let's look and see what the new one is. Well, if you're listening and not watching, this is very much part of the Freedom Convoy. As a matter of fact, it starts out with an animation of a film about it. There's a ticker for, I guess, the amount of days they've been protesting. But there's a little video about GoFundMe, GoScamMe. And some of these faces that I'm looking at here, Tamara Leach, for instance, I see these are people that were directly connected to the Freedom Convoy in 2022. So this early prototype version of this truck convoy apparently was either in connection or became connected with the larger Freedom Convoy of 2022. So following up with our timeline, if I scroll down on the site that we're looking at, if you're watching the video, it's a trade site, Transportation Nation Network. This is from October 22nd, 2021. The Canadian Trucking Alliance, CTA, is warning of increased supply chain disruptions should the United States follow through on its recently announced cross-border vaccine mandate. Earlier this month, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security announced that beginning in early January of 2022, all inbound foreign national travelers, including truckers, must be fully vaccinated for COVID-19 and provide related proof of vaccination. So this is important because first we had the Canadian Trucking Alliance discussing this, and this is a very important trade group in Canada that advocates on behalf of folks that drive trucks for a living. And it's essentially saying, this is late October now, this is gonna be a problem, right? So scrolling down further, we see some more information. It says, one top Canadian trucking executive asserted the mandate would result in a disaster. And the CTA is sounding the alarm on just how deeply the vaccination requirements will impact the supply chain. So I just think that this is important to see and know about, because one, we have CTA, which is a reputable trade group organization in Canada that works on behalf of truckers, saying that this is going to be a problem. It was known about ahead of time, and also that this is bringing in the United States into the equation, so that we understand again that this is not specifically a Trudeau or specifically Canada policy, that this is really has more to do with the Mexico, US, Canada commerce than anything else. And kind of following that timeline of events, there's another article by the Toronto Star, and this was published in December 13, 2021. So early December. So you can see things really began picking up, even though there's discussions back in August of what's, you know, coming down the road. Things really pick up in October and December in terms of, you know, these articles and public discussions. But this article is in the business section titled Health Experts Critical of Canadian Truckers Vaccine Exemption Proposal. Okay. The subtitle, Canada's trucking industry wants the federal government and the U.S. to exempt their workers from the forthcoming vaccination mandates. So essentially, the CTA is back here, the Canadian Trucking Alliance, and they're saying that they would like for their employees, the folks that are truckers, they want them to be able to continue their exempt status that they had previously being essential workers to vaccination mandates. Canada's trucking industry wants the federal government and the U.S. to exempt their workers from the forthcoming vaccination mandates. However, there is another side to this too, and I think that this is important to understand. One, that there were public discussions, and that there is another argument to this. So I think it's easy for us in the U.S. not really understanding this context and just seeing, you know, things in social media to say, well, yeah, you know, someone shouldn't get fired because they don't want to get vaccinated. Well, let's see what some of the other side of the argument is. So if you're watching, I'm just scrolling down. The CTA wants the government to uphold the exemption it granted truckers when vaccines became available earlier this year until the country resolves its supply chain issues. So CTA is trying to leverage the supply chain to essentially, you know, allow folks that are truckers to continue this exempt status. However, health experts say that exemption would be unfair because other industries are also facing worker shortages too and not being granted an exemption. And, you know, the way that I'm reading this, it's almost like in public schools where, you know, when you have families try to use the religious exemption, and they're not really religious, it's just that they don't, you know, want to get their kids vaccinated, and how some of those loopholes have closed up in different states in the United States. And I'm not saying that it's you know a perfect comparison, but it does look like the CTA is trying to leverage pre-existing supply chain issues, which have many, many different reasons, of course, trying to leverage that to kind of push back this exemption, knowing that it's going to be an issue for some of the truckers. However, again, the health experts say, well, look, there's a lot of different industries that are facing supply chain issues and short staffed. And if we do this for the trucking industry, well, then what about aviation? And you know, what about people transporting crates via vessel, ships? What about other employees that work in other branches of the federal government? What we're going to end up doing is, you know, if we exempt for one, we're going to have to exempt for all. And if we exempt for all, then that's a different discussion, because then what we're really doing is having a whole different discussion about what the national policy is going to be for handling and mitigating the spread of COVID, because that's going to be, you know, the amount of people that would affect would be much, much larger. And that's a reasonable argument. There's a quote here: everybody admires a hardworking truck driver, and that all through the pandemic, they have been barreling through with their loads of food for the supermarkets. But the vaccines are available, and they've been available for the best part of a year now, said Timothy Sly, an epidemiologist and professor emeritus at Ryerson University School of Occupational and Public Health. With the increasing variant coming along, there is no excuse at all now for not being vaccinated. So, I mean, there's some underlying discussion happening here. It's not kind of like, it's a little passive aggressive, because you can take this at face value and you could say, well, CTA is saying, look, we have a supply chain issue. This is going to affect some of the drivers. Some of our drivers are going to quit, and it's just going to make things worse. However, if you want to be a little more cynical, you could say, well, CTA is trying to leverage the supply chain issue to make kind of like an excuse for some of their employees that just don't want to get vaccinated for whatever reason. And then we have folks in the occupational and public health realm come in and say, well, yeah, but look, I mean, that's why are truckers different from anybody else? Essentially, there are people that are employed in other sectors of the economy, and they're following these rules. So, you know, your folks need to follow the rules too. We're in this together. But, you know, then at the end, it also says that there's really no excuse now for not being vaccinated. And I think that there's a little undercurrent there too of saying, well, look, you know, it's one thing to be vaccine hesitant, but it's been a long time and you need to get vaccinated. So it sounds like there's some front, you know, some fronts being put up to the actual discussion of, on the one side, the CTA kind of saying like, look, some of our employees just aren't going to get vaccinated, right or wrong. And then we have folks in the public health and occupational health realm saying, well, they need to, right? It's been long enough. There's no reason not to. And that's kind of the underlying grievance in this article, and why it's so interesting to the larger discussion. And so that gives us some context, I think, to the professional organizations and maybe the public-facing discussion, as well as kind of the underlying currents to those public discussions, and also the policies that have led to this, that not only include Canada and, you know, Trudeau, who's kind of the focus of criticism, but also the United States and also Mexico, to be honest. But I'm looking at another article here. This is from Times News Network, and this is about a month old, 4 weeks ago, titled, "So Many Angry People, Experts Say Online Conversation Around Trucker Convoy Veering into Dangerous Territory." And this is one of the first articles or early articles that I found that begins to look at the convoy in its iteration of how we probably know it, 2022, the Freedom Convoy, or whatever you want to call it. And people, you know, beginning to put up some warning flags. So up to now, I think, you know, we've been pretty balanced, and we've just looked at government policy. And I think that regardless of what you think about the pandemic response, that at least the CTA is attempting to represent all of its members to the best of its ability. And that includes members for whatever reason who don't want to get vaccinated. And, you know, there might be a genuine grievance there. However, there's also a reasonable response too from health officials and the government saying, look, this isn't just a trucking industry. This is all industry. And as a matter of fact, and when you step back and you look at the broader changes that occurred, they're actually loosening restrictions. We're loosening restrictions for non-essential workers to be able to cross the border. But if we're going to do that, we also need to have some mitigation factors involved with that, because now there's going to be a lot more people going back and forth. And one of those is going to be lifting prior exemptions to vaccination for essential workers. And so that's really the core of how we get to this point. And I just want to reiterate that, because most of that is not included in conversations when you're listening to podcasts, for instance, or you're on social media or even cable news. The conversation, at least from kind of like one side of the media realm, kind of picks up here. Now, I do think it's important to honestly look at claims being made about the people involved in the 2022 Freedom Convoy, because there are some people that are involved that you can't debate that are not good people. And it's not just a few bad apples either. It's not just a big gathering where you had some fringe people show up. We're talking about the core, the people that organize this essentially are very questionable individuals. And we're going to go through that. I don't want to lose you, however, in doing so, because you can still rationalize how you want. I'm not going to tell you what to think regarding this convoy or these policies on a broader in a broader view. But I mean, if we're going to be objective about the honest grievances and the policies that led to this, we also need to be honest about what this Freedom Convoy iteration was, at least from the viewpoint of who organized it. We'll get to the participants later. And for sure, there were people involved that had genuine grievances. But again, so if you're watching the video, I'm on another article that is talking about people beginning to track extremist chatter online. And there's specifically one individual of interest here. So the person that is key to this article is Kurt Phillips, founder and former lead writer for Anti-Racist Canada. And this was in an interview for ctvnews.ca. There's some quotes to read. There are people who genuinely believe that this is overreach by the federal government, but there are also a lot of other groups that are involved and individuals who are involved who have a long history of very overheated rhetoric. Even though the organizers say it will be peaceful, Phillips said he's seen people online calling the trucker convoy Canada's version of the U.S. Capitol insurrection on January 6, 2021, for the truckers to ram their trucks in the parliament and people encouraging the hanging of politicians. Some of the organizers are trying to get people to dial back the rhetoric, but the genie's already out of the bottle. People are energized in an incredible way right now, and it's hard to see something not happening. I don't know if it will be on the scale of January 6th in the United States, but there are many angry people. Right from the start, the largest groups have been organized and managed by people who have connections to groups such as Yellow Vests, a separatist Western movement, Wexit, he said. So right from the start, this began as part of fringe politics. And that's important to understand. Two key things. He goes on to say that this doesn't mean that there aren't people involved that, you know, have a heart in the right place mentality, and that this will probably be used as a propaganda tool for years to come. But the two important things here are, one, that there's a similarity to an event that happened back in 2019. And we'll see that really that event in 2019 regarding protests over federal pipeline policies was a template for what happened in 2022. And that's important because we'll see that this wasn't some type of spontaneous uprising. that this was more of a rubber stamp type thing or template that has been used in iterations. And we already saw that, back in October too. However, what's also going to be important are these groups such as Yellow Vests. Here it says the Separatist Western Movements, but that's really Wexit, or an incarnation of the Maverick Party in Canada, which is a fringe political party, PPC, People's Party of Canada. All of these groups are very, very, very far right wing separatist type groups. They are involved with the Yellow Vest movements, white nationalists, other people that just are not that great. And here's an article from antihate.ca. And this is regarding a specific person within the Yellow Vest movement. But again, this is not a situation where it's one bad apple. This is really what the movement represents. And so if you're listening on this article, if you want to look it up, it's called Yellow Vest Canada Supporter Threatens to Kill Law Enforcement, Claims to Have Cachet of Weapons. And scrolling down, there's screen captures from his social media showing him pointing a gun at a picture of Trudeau. Going further down, there are some screenshots of him communicating with another person in which he talks about shooting people and killing people. He talks about some accelerationist ideas. At the end, the individual I was talking to says, yeah, go ahead and do that. The military will get sent in. And in the final screen capture, this Yellow Vest member says, fine, then we go to war. Remember, I have friends, as do others, who are ex-military, and we have stored weapons from the South African war here in Canada, so let's do it. So that's the kind of people involved in the Yellow Vest movements and some of these Western separatist movements. Yellow Vest movement being more of a movement. However, when we talk about things like PPC and Maverick Party, those are political incarnations that cross-pollinate with this movement and other more radical movements involving white nationalism. Okay, so now we have an idea of who some of these organizers were, and we're beginning to see where these claims come from when people are saying, like, hey, these folks that you're supporting are like white nationalist extremists. And you're looking at videos on your Facebook page or Twitter, Instagram, and you might see people of color involved, and everyone seems to be having a good time and barbecuing and playing street hockey and stuff. We'll get into it, but there are very valid reasons for concern about what this was about, essentially, regardless of who was there. And we'll get into that discussion too. Before we do, though, we need to talk about this. United We Roll. Because as I showed you a few months ago, back in October, how there was kind of like a pre-convoy or a smaller version of this convoy that had occurred regarding vaccine passports. Well, United We Roll was a convoy that was based on a totally different topic, however, organized by a lot of the same forces, if not actual individuals, as this truck convoy was. So let's look at what United We Roll meant. So essentially, this, now that we have this truck convoy in 2022, we can look back on United We Roll as kind of like a prototype version of this, or a template for what had occurred. I think that this is important to know so that we don't have a misunderstanding of this being some type of grassroots or direct action, something that happened in the moment. This essentially the same people that organized similar things in the past, and this was one of them. Okay, so United We Roll, an earlier version of 2022's trucker convoy, a group consisting of around 200 flatbed trucks drove through Ottawa and Parliament Hill, which kind of were the flashpoints for the 2022 trucker convoy. These protests were organized by extremists such as Yellow Vest of Canada and white nationalists. So Yellow Vest of Canada pop up there again. We'll get into some more nitty gritty about specifically how they might interact with some political parties. But again, these are not just
common folk, common working people that are getting together and upset over, you know, vaccines, or in this case, this was about grievances around an oil pipeline. The protest rebranded itself to United We Roll to push back against accusations of over racism. And this is important because, again, this was a much smaller truck convoy that was organized by people that are kind of known to be extremists. And because of that, the effects were mitigated, right? This wasn't taken as seriously. There's a lot of media pushback. A lot of people were investigating who these folks were and kind of marginalizing them based on their extremist politics. So within United We Roll, these folks decided, hey, we can't come out and say we're yellow vests. We can't come out and say we're with the Maverick Party or PPC. And we'll talk about what all that means in a second. So instead, what we're going to do is rebrand this as United We Roll. This kind of, you know, it's a good slogan. It's a good bumper sticker. It doesn't tell you who's behind it. It's kind of like a super PAC messaging in that way. And it's a prototype for what was to come with the truck convoy or, you know, Truckers for Freedom 2022, for instance, and all those hashtags.
So we talked about yellow vests and kind of the broader spectrum of fringe political parties, the Maverick Party being one of them, PPC, and how these were all kind of wrapped up in a whole bunch of negative things, separatism, white nationalism, a whole bunch of conspiracy theories, et cetera. So what does that have to do with United We Roll? Because United We Roll, we're saying, is kind of the prototype for the Freedom Convoy of 2022. Okay, so I'm on a site, again, antihate.ca. And there's a section to this. It says, important context about the Yellow Vests Canada Convoy, aka United We Roll. And if anything out of this, I just want to show the bullet points that they provide, tying the two together. Because as we just said, it isn't that yellow vests were involved in United We Roll and United We Roll is similar to the Freedom Convoy. It's that initially there was a yellow vest protest and then they changed the name because essentially of bad publicity. The people who were involved in that also were key organizers. I mean, like names on the GoFundMe account for the Freedom Convoy 2022. So that's why we're looking at this. That's the relevancy to this. So some bullet points here, there's quotes. And again, this is not a Freedom Convoy. This is the prior iteration, the prototype of this United We Roll. Convoy organizer Glenn Carrot says his group still identifies with the yellow vests and are welcoming them to the convoy. The organizers of the convoy express support for anti-Muslim hate groups, including Canadian Combat Coalition, Soldiers of Odin, and Worldwide Coalition Against Islam. The rebrand from Yellow Vest to the Yellow Vest Convoy to United We Roll is diverting attention away from all the stuff that I just said. And so this continues to go on. Another bullet point that's important. The hate is mostly directed at Muslims, left-leaning individuals, government media, and occasionally law enforcement. They share conspiracy theories, such as Muslims are behind a wildfire that occurred in order to build a super mosque. And oil and economic concerns are an issue, but they are not the primary issue of concern. So two important things, two big things about why we're looking at this article. One, again, just to reiterate, United We Roll was a yellow vest event. And we kind of know what yellow vests are now, at least in Canada. They changed the name. It isn't that they were kind of involved and, you know, maybe they're like a fringe element. They were the sole element. And then they changed the name because they didn't want the protest to be so closely connected to them. Okay. Secondly, it talks about how you know, kind of that's all wrapped up in these other things. Soldiers of Odin stands out. Anytime we see something like that, that's definitely white nationalist. We'll see later there's somebody involved with the Freedom Convoy 2022, Pat King, who was wearing an Odin shirt in his trial that's occurring right now. But okay, let's jump down to the second point here. Here it says oil and economic concerns are an issue, but not their primary concern. And this is important too, because what we're going to see is that the Yellow Vest people, the Maverick Party people, the PPC people that end up being the core of who organized this 2022 Freedom Convoy, that essentially the mandates are not the main issue either, right? At least for them. That doesn't mean that people that participated in it believe that. It doesn't mean that people participated in United We Roll didn't think that that was about oil and economic concerns. However, it's the same people that are organizing it. And in the earlier iteration, right, there's a whole lot of things. So hatred towards Muslims, left-leaning individuals, media, government, all these different groups, the Canadian Combat Coalition, Soldiers of Odin, Worldwide Coalition Against Islam, that's what they're really about. But they're putting a front up and organizing this protest, pretending as if it's about oil and economic concerns, using that to stir right-wing populist movement action rhetoric. They're going to do the same thing in 2022 with the Truck Convoy for Freedom, except this time it's about grievances towards the government regarding those policies that we talked about truckers being in an exempt status for vaccination when they cross the border. And so if I had heard that, if someone just said what I said about a movement, you know, for which I initially supported, and maybe at this point, just seeing it on social media, I put some, you know, emotional, maybe financial energy into, I might say, well, all right. I mean, you know, maybe that website is biased. I mean, it says like anti-hate on it. Maybe it's just some like shell for another organization that's connected to a liberal party in Canada or something. It's hard to say that because there's direct quotes and you can track down quotes. So, you know, that's an obstacle, but I want to take that into account. And so I found another article from CBC News. So this is pretty mainstream news. This is dated back February 26, 2019. And so this is mainstream news. It's not, you know, some, whatever you want to call it, you know, smaller organization that you can say is biased. The title here says, United We Roll wasn't just about oil and gas. Sheer knew that and worked the crowd anyway. And what this is it's an opinion article. It's criticizing a conservative politician in Canada for associating with these people. And well, okay, this is an opinion article, et cetera, and it's political in nature. The point of showing it is really down here. It's condemning this politician for essentially acknowledging these people because they're such extremists. But the point to really hammer home is two paragraphs. Scheer ought to have made a distinction between his support for Canadian oil workers and support for the racism and violence that has been associated with United We Roll. And that's the key argument that is happening today, and maybe in more of a caricature, regarding the Freedom Convoy 2022, isn't it? It's a distinction between saying there might be legitimate grievances, right, in place about the change of this policy for this exempt group of people that were formerly exempt due to their status as essential workers. And that being truckers, that's valid. However, that doesn't have anything to do with the Truck Convoy of 2022, even if people who had, you know, their hearts and minds in the right place maybe went and participated in it, or more likely than that are on social media supporting it. So that's very important here, that a few years ago, this was already happening with the same people that organized the truck convoy in 2022, right? So that's not a new talking point, right? This is something that's been in the zeitgeist in Canadian politics for a little while, but this is possibly equally as important, if not more. The rally has been associated with Yellow Vests Canada, a group whose Facebook page is rife with racist and xenophobic views, particularly towards Muslims and immigrants. In fact, the United We Roll convoy was originally named the Yellow Vest Convoy, but was changed due to the obviously problematic association. And so I think that that's important because it's another source. It's a mainstream source. I'm not saying trust mainstream media, but what it does is it pushes back against maybe a rationalization that one can make by saying, oh yeah, I mean, but that's some anti-hate website. And you know, maybe they're crazy left-wing people and they're just making these accusations. No, this is a fact, right? United We Roll was factually a yellow vest movement. We know what yellow vests are, what that represents, and that these are going to be the same people who end up organizing the truck convoy 2022. We'll get to proving that, but the proof is really, you know, it's obvious. It's associated with the names of the people who started the GoFundMe account for that protest. Okay, so let's get to it. Let's talk about the organizers for the truck convoy of 2022. I'm going to focus on a few of the key players. These are people that are most out front on social media or were directly connected with the GoFundMe account that had been frozen. At this point, you might have heard of Pat King or Patrick King because he's so outrageous that even mainstream media is picking up on him. But his clips are all over social media, and they range from white genocide to overt racism, lots of conspiracy theories. I'll grab something from the Twitter page to show you, but he was part of the Yellow Vest movement. So that was the movement or organization that had put together the previous convoy. He was a leader within the Wexit movement. And to folks in the US who might not know what that is, but essentially it's it was a separatist movement of provinces in Western Canada. This is pretty extreme, right? These are folks that wanted to separate from the government of Canada and start their own little mini kingdoms. Definitely a right-wing extremist. And again, you don't need to take my word for it. I'll show you some stuff, as well as a conspiracist. So with Pat King, I mean, it's almost not worth spending a lot of time on because he is so out and out. But I mean, for example, you can go on Twitter or any social media, just type in Pat King and you'll see the things that he has to say. This is just one example. This is a group on Twitter that kind of archives and collects yellow vest extremist content from Canada. And there's a video tied to it. We won't play it, but it says, King dives headfirst into great replacement white genocide myth. It's all a conspiracy, see, because whites have the strongest bloodlines. He calls it the Anglo-Saxon replacement, so Antifa can't get mad at him. And who is behind it? Muslims and the United Nations. And for those of you that aren't up on these types of conspiracies, this is all very common right-wing extremist content. Great replacement / white genocide. Just the idea that we have immigration is causing a replacement of white people in Western countries. This is often tied to anti-Islam rhetoric. And we already saw that in a prior article discussing yellow vests and how the hatred is targeted towards Muslim people. He's talking about strong bloodlines and, you know, instead of calling it white replacement, Anglo-Saxon replacement. So he's obviously talking about Antifa here, the idea that Muslims and the United Nations, of course, is, you know, as old a trope as you can get for right-wing global conspiracies. I'm sure that that eventually lands you in some anti-Semitic content, but this is the type of information that you'll find on Pat King. He has, there's lots of videos. It's kind of good that he's so out and out about his racism, bigotry, et cetera, because there's just a lot of content out there for you to be able to check out on your own. So if you're interested, I would encourage you to do that. I'm not going to spend a lot of time because it's so public facing. And this is just a great example, great replacement, white genocide. It's all because of Muslims, the United Nations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So Tamara Leach, unlike Pat King, cannot be separated from the 2022 truck convoy. She's currently being detained as this video is being created. Parole had been denied for her. So who is Tamara Leach, and you know, why is she important to this? Well, she's fundamental to all of this. She's the individual that started the GoFundMe campaign. So that's how core of an individual to this larger movement Tamara is. What's her background? Well, it's going to sound familiar. She's an organizer for Yellow Vests Canada, and we know what those people are now. She was a coordinator for Wexit, and it sounds funny, right? But just like we discussed with Pat King, how he had been involved with separatist movements, she was a coordinator for Wexit, which was, again, a movement for provinces to leave the federal jurisdiction of the country of Canada. And she's currently a secretary for the Maverick Party. The Maverick Party is another extreme right political party in Canada. And again, you don't need to take my word for it. Let's check out the Maverick Party and see what they're about. Okay, so the Maverick Party, this is just based off of a Wikipedia page. So the Maverick Party, formerly known as Wexit Canada, and that's important because it ties Pat King to it, is a Canadian federal political party and advocates for constitutional changes to benefit for the independence of Western Canada. The party has its roots in Alberta separatism. So it was started by a Conservative Party of Canada candidates, and it's essentially a separatist party. It has no meaningful representation right now or power in Canada. Just kind of bouncing down to the history, the Wexit movement gained traction in October of 2019, shortly after Justin Trudeau won a re-election. So basically people got upset that Trudeau won again, and they said, we're going to leave the country. In early 2020, Wexit Alberta started purchasing billboards in Alberta criticizing Trudeau for various things such as ISIS terrorist reintegration. And that one's very important because that goes to the yellow vests and their anti-Islamic rhetoric. That goes to the white genocide replacement theory stuff that Pat King was talking about. So all these ideas are combined, right? And this is a official political party kind of representing those ideas, even though, of course, they deny that. So they purchased these billboards, and one of them is essentially white replacement theory content. Let's see, what do some of these other billboards have to say? So after ISIS terrorist reintegration, things like tax theft, foreign interference, that's another code word, foreign interference, that might be, you know, United Nations, that might be anti-Semitic global conspiracies. WEF is a new kind of version of that old UN global conspiracy, globalist, New World Order, whatever you want to call it. All those conspiracies are just rehashed anti-Semitic global conspiracies and ethics violations. So this is the kind of party that the Maverick Party is, and this is the party for whom Tamara Leach is part of. And Benjamin Dichter is another key organizer for the 2022 truck convoy. His name was added to the GoFundMe campaign after Tamara's name was already on it. He supports a political party, the PPC. We can check out their page really quick. He was a failed Conservative Party candidate, so he's political in nature.
And he has some pretty outrageous anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant comments available as well. It's a trend with these folks, as we've seen, and it's not too hard to find. You can just jump on social media, type in their name, and you'll see screenshots or videos of them saying some pretty atrocious stuff. All right, so Benjamin Dichter. So let's see what we can find on him. If you're listening, I'm on the website, What's Wrong with BJ Dichter. And, you know, these are kind of like attack things, and I get that. But I do like this because these are quotes and there's links to videos or video evidence of him saying the things that this is claiming that he did say. In the beginning of this, it talks about his role in the Freedom Convoy as founder and co-fundraiser. Dichter, he can't really argue that he's not a part of this. Like Tamara, his name is on the GoFundMe, but this was the individual that we quoted way back in the beginning, talking about vaccine passports. This guy's been on TV. He's been on Fox News. He was on the Tucker Carlson show. So he's a public face of this. There's no arguing he's not a part of it. He's mixed up with the PPC, which I've alluded to already. So one section here, at the People's Party of Canada convention in 2019, Dichter made statements about the dangers of political Islamists and went on to say that the Liberal Party is infested with Islamists. And I mean, just right there, that's that white genocide, white replacement, anti-Islam, global conspiracy stuff that we started out with Pat King, that got wrapped up in the Maverick Party on their site. It's all systemic and just a part of who these people are. He added at the same meeting that by meeting with extremists, and by that he means just people like Trudeau, the conservative establishment politicians put at risk moderate and secular Muslims who want nothing more but to integrate into Canada, to become Canadian, and to leave the garbage of their birth country behind them. I don't think there's any commentary that needs to be said on what that is. In the same conference, Dichter said, despite what our corporate media and political leaders want to admit, Islamist entryism and the adaptation of political Islam is rotting away at our society like syphilis. And this is the founder, right? And co-fundraiser of the Truck Convoy 2022. This is yellow vest stuff, right? We've already kind of talked about it. And unlike claiming that there's a few bad apples, no. And this is why it gets hard, because even though there's, and you know, I'll repeat this over and over, but even though there's legitimate grievances for truckers that might be wrapped up in this change of policy that we discussed, that's not what this person, and that's not what the convoy organizers cared about. They're using that just like they used oil pipelines in 2019 with the other convoy that they led, that they had to change the name of when they were out and out yellow vests. It's the same people, it's the same thing. And we'll comment on what that means at the end, but it's important for us to know that. And for those of you that are watching this, this is the evidence of those quotes. There's a YouTube video. If you really want to check it out, you can look for Shocking, Courageous, Honest Speech at PPC Convention in Quebec by Benjamin Dichter. And so this is, again, he's another politician. He ran as a conservative candidate and lost. He's affiliated with the PPC now. And he's just echoing all these extremist and right-wing conspiracy things that we've already covered. But the evidence, anyway, if you want to check it out, is on YouTube. I'm not going to play the video on the podcast. Okay, so the people that put this together, and these are the core people. These are people that, with their names on the GoFundMe account. So the core people that started this aren't great, right? They they're objectively racist. They're objectively part of some extremist groups, separatist groups, and white nationalist groups. We can't argue that. However, conversely, we also can't argue that many truckers were part of an exemption provided by the Canadian and US government, if we're leaving Mexico out of it, that stated these are essential workers, and essential workers in this realm of transportation don't need to be vaccinated. And so that is also a reality, and that is something that changed, right? So both of those things are true. So what about funding? Because, you know, again, another thing you could look at is to say, well, okay, the organizers for this are bad people, right? But what about the people that supported it, right? And there's two ways of supporting. There's supporting financially, and there's supporting with boots on the ground and being there. So financially. So using data from the GoFundMe account that was released, over half of the donations did not originate in Canada. So over half of the donations were from the United States. And that's important, because if you're the Canadian government, well, I mean, let's frame it like this. Let's say that there were a group of protesters on the southern border of the United States, and they were protesting, immigration law. Okay. And so they, you know, they're saying current U.S. immigration practices are unjust, and we want them to change. And so what we're going to do is we're going to block ports of entry, right? So border crossings. So the U.S. government sees that there's a GoFundMe account linked to this, right? The group has something on Facebook about this, you know, help us join the fight against the evil, whomever the president is at that time. And so it's frozen, and folks get in there and they look at it and they see, wow, over half of this money is coming from Mexico. So, you know, for an American, think of what that story would be to an American. Well, how is that analogy any different than this for a Canadian, right? The largest donation to kind of wipe out this idea that this was like a working class grassroots type thing, $90,000 from an American billionaire. And so how outraged would you be if, using that analogy I just stated, we had folks protesting immigration law, and then you see who's actually funding it, and the majority of that money is coming from Mexico, right? Or maybe some South American country. And then you see this is being portrayed as like, America is abusing these innocent refugees, and this is, you know, these people are just trying to do this or that. And then you find out that $90,000 from that GoFundMe came from a billionaire that lives in like Cancun or something. Right. So like, think about how you would interpret that, and then maybe step back and then refocus on how you think about what was happening with this truck convoy in Canada. Something else that I want to say about this, and I do apologize if it seems like this is it's a lot of negativity. We'll get to, you know, the other side again. I wanted to start with the honest grievances that do exist for this group of workers, right? But first, before I even talk about this slide, none of the people that I mentioned that were key organizers for the events are truck drivers. So, I mean, also just consider that when we talk about what's a grassroots movement versus, you know, like AstroTurf, all those people are political. They're all members of either political parties, or they were members of political organizations that are kind of more extreme, like Yellow Vests. None of those people actually drive trucks. Okay, and that kind of dovetails into this. Teamsters of Canada, Canadian Trucking Alliance, and the Private Motor Truck Council of Canada, none of these organizations support the protests. Now, in the United States, Teamsters has a connotation to it that can leave a bad taste in some people's mouth, but the Canadian Trucking Alliance should not, because in the beginning of this, when we were talking about organizations in Canada, talking about trucking groups in Canada saying, listen, back in, you know, August, October, this is going to be a problem, right? The supply chain is already an issue, and it's going to become more of an issue if we go through with these changes, excluding truckers from the exemption to get vaccinated. Well, one of the main players behind all that, and you can go back and rewatch the video, was the Canadian Trucking Alliance, right? The CTA. So we've already talked about the CTA. And this group was very much advocating for the Canadian government to at least slow their roll when it came to this mandatory vaccination for truckers, right? And maybe, you know, more so, let's just not do that. Let's maintain our exemption status. And we talked about the other side of that too. We don't need to rehash everything in the video, but I wanted to call that out because, you know, the Teamsters are important. If you are in unions, you know, the connotation goes away when you're actually involved with the group. I do know that people might see that and laugh. Well, okay, you can laugh at that. That's fine. But the CTA, you can't laugh at, right? And we've already kind of shown what they are, as well as the Private Motor Truck Council of Canada. We haven't discussed them, but I mean, they're just objectively a group, an alliance for people that drive trucks. And so again, it's important to bring these people up because none of these organizations supported what was going on with these protests. None of these organizations supported whatever hashtag he wanted or the trucking convoy or the subsequent protests that occurred after that, as well as the occupation in city centers. As a matter of fact, CTA was very vocal, and we can find things all over social media or in search engines, were very vocal in denouncing the actions of these people. As a matter of fact, CTA came out and said, because these people are doing what they're doing, because these people are protesting, it's actually discrediting and doing more harm to other truckers that might have honest grievances about getting vaccinated. The participants, because this is another group, we kind of said that you could participate financially with this, or you could participate boots on the ground. And, you know, this type of anecdotal evidence is highly subjective. And unfortunately, a lot of people get swayed by it because they see videos on YouTube or Twitter showing what, not just this protest, just any protest, right? Showing one thing. And then it's kind of confirmation bias, and the people that they like and they follow are showing videos of this one angle of the protest, not the other. And so when someone else, you know, kind of is going to debate them, you know, that person had been looking at different videos. And of course, this is an issue with social media and algorithms altogether. But let's look at participants. And first, we'll look at some of the participants that were not great. And then we'll kind of discuss the other. And so this is just one example of some folks that were participating that weren't great. This is an article from Independent. Canadian police arrest 11 people with massive weapons cache at Freedom Convoy protest. So if we scroll down here, you might have seen an image. I don't know if it's in this article, but on social media, of just guns and ammunition strewn across the table. And that's what this comes from. Information was received that this group had access to a cache of firearms with a large quantity of ammunition, Alberta RCMP said. The group was said to have a willingness to use force against the police if any attempts were made to disrupt the blockade. An example of the militant mindset of a small segment of the protest occurred at around 8 p.m. when a large farm tractor and semi-truck, both involved in the blockade, attempted to ram a police vehicle, police said in the statement. Police seized 13 long guns, handguns, multiple sets of body armor, a machete, a large quantity of ammunition, and high capacity magazines. And here's another article. This is from the New York Post. Four Freedom Convoy protesters charged in plot to kill Canadian cops. This also has an image that's been shared around social media. Let me see if I can get the answer if you're watching. There you go. This has become like a meme at this point. Four Freedom Convoy protesters with an arsenal of guns who were ready to use force against the police
have been charged with conspiring to commit murder. So this is just another example of some folks that were participating in this, were part of extremist movements that weren't great individuals. Just again, though, as people who might not have had the context that you now have and that we have after learning about where all this came from, initially when you see this, you say, oh, well, but these are some bad apples, right? Well, not really, right? I mean, the whole organization of this protest were essentially bad apples, and it is kind of the inverse of that. Some, you know, people with goodwill got involved with it and believed it to be something that it really wasn't. Now, you know, that having been said, not everybody at these protests were those people. As a matter of fact, I have nothing to substantiate this, but I would assume that most of the people at these protests were not armed extremists. Now, you know, was there a political slant? Yeah, there was. And we have to be honest about that. But that political slant might not have gone as far as supporting separatist movements, white nationalists, or yellow vests. You know, these might have been people that vote conservative party or, you know, like admired the MAGA movement in the United States and Trump, but in their mind, rationalize and separate that from extremist organizations. And, you know, there might have been people that were just not political at all. There might have been people that were there that were genuinely frustrated. And I'm not going to say might, I'm sure that there were people at this protest that were just genuinely frustrated. And, you know, these types of truck convoys, just in general, you know, in Canada, it doesn't seem as if these are rare occurrences. It seems like these are things that happen, especially with fundraising events, and they happen in the US as well. I just happen to see quite a few in Canada doing a cursory search. So yeah, were a good portion of the folks at this rally politically motivated? Probably. You know, they were probably conservative or vote right wing. Were they all extremists? No. I mean, we can say that, of course not. Were there extremists there? Yes. Were the people that organized this extreme? Yeah. Yeah, they were. And so this is when it gets a little complicated, because you have people who they themselves might not hold extremist ideology, and maybe they're not even conservative. A good portion of these folks, again, might not be involved in politics at all. But these folks are getting mixed up with other folks who are, and they're getting mixed up in narratives and actions that are extreme. And, you know, this is when things get complicated for people. And this is really when you get into kind of like the online never-ending debate of what happened, right? What was this? Well, yeah, there were a lot of people there partying, playing street hockey, having cookouts, having a good time, for sure. Okay, you can't deny that. However, you honestly can't deny that there were extremists there too, and that the extremists weren't just a few bad apples, that this was political in nature, that a lot of the funding came from the United States, and that the people who organized it were political. They were not truck drivers. Okay, and so let's wrap this up. I've already kind of gone into some conclusions. So there are facts, and then there are opinions. Facts are inconvenient. You know, there's one side of the media narrative that would like for this to be portrayed as all like a Trump January 6th Canadian version type thing of right-wing extremists. And then there's another contingent that wants this to be shown as ordinary people standing up to elites, standing up to a big government overreach, fighting for their rights. And what more right to sovereignty do we have than over our own bodies? And so there's a very strong argument to be made with that. Neither of these are true, right? And really, it's not they're lies, not because they're totally incorrect.
They're lies because they're lies by omission. They're lies by leaving out the other sides of the story. So, you know, is there genuine grievance? Yes. The CTA said that this was going to be an issue leading up to 2022. We went through the history of this and we saw, you know, an earlier version of this happen, a much smaller version. And then we saw people saying, hey, we're looking online and we're seeing the rhetoric and this is, you know, this is not good. Then we saw, you know, an extreme element kind of seize an opportunity and transition away from what had previously been restrictions with oil and gas pipelines to essentially co-opting this genuine grievance, which, hey, I mean, this is what political organizations and political people do, especially when they're in the business of grievances. You know, it doesn't mean that the organizers of this, right, these people like Pat and Tamara, it doesn't mean that these people think, oh, well, now all these folks are going to become yellow vests or they're going to join the Maverick Party and we're going to have our weird independent Western kingdom that, you know, has some white nationalist stuff going on. But what it does is it provides a populist, what appears to be grassroots movement against a liberal party that's in power. And if anything, that pushes politics to the right, that emboldens and creates talking points for conservative, more mainstream conservative politicians. But it also kind of dials into the grievances, which really, when you get into extremism, you know, how do people fall down that rabbit hole? And that's a whole thing, but much of it is based in grievance, in personal grievance. And I mean, that's what this was. It was just an exhibition of grievance. And, you know, was the grievance even factually correct? Well, not necessarily. When we looked at the breakdown of power and, you know, many of these restrictions were actually things done on the local or provincial level, not the federal level. And I think what you see in the videos and these protests is that it's no longer a protest about a specific classification or exemption for a specific group of employees. I think it's kind of like these things do kind of turn into a general grievance against the government type thing. And, you know, it kind of went from being about a very specific group of employees and what their relationship is to the vaccination. And it kind of blossomed out into, well, this is about lockdown measures. This is about masks. This is about schools. And then it just kind of becomes, you know, a party. And I'm sure that all of that happened with this as well. When you go on to things like Twitter now, the discussion is way past, you know, the actual specific events of what happened with the United States, Mexico, and Canada involving allowing non-essential workers to cross the border. And with that also saying non-essential workers cannot be exempt from vaccination because we're going to have more travel. Right, we're way beyond that. I mean, we're into WEF global conspiracies now and emergency measures, and that's how these things go. Because of people, I mean, I was gonna say I don't want to call people out, but why not? I mean, like the Tim Pools of the world, the Jordan Petersons now of the world, the Alex Joneses of the world, the Cernoviches of the world. Even door, you know, that's how these people make money, right? It's just kind of jumping from thing to thing. And even within this one event that happened, this truck convoy to protest, you know, this vaccination measure, we're past that now. I mean, now it's just all, and it's just recycled narrative of it. Yeah, now the big thing is WEF and how that's it. I've heard the story before, right? It was the World Trade Organization. Before that, it was the United Nations. In between, it was FEMA death camps, right? And it's the same narrative, right? And it goes back very, very far. We won't get into it here. It's a whole episode in and of itself. But getting back to kind of more of these conclusions, grassroots or AstroTurf, I mean, again, probably both, but we saw that there's a lot of AstroTurf, right? The people that organized this weren't even in the trucking industry. They were politicians. They were members of, you know, far-right political groups. A lot of the donations came from the United States. And we talked about that analogy of, well, how would you react, right? If this happened in the United States with our border with Mexico or a South American country. So, and also, you know, many of these donations were in the thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars from very, very wealthy people. So moving forward, what's this going to be? Well, you know, this is almost like a separate episode and discussion in itself. And I think it depends about who we're talking about, right? If we're talking about maybe the least important people, for the folks that, you know, you might follow on social media, it's just going to be a cornucopia. It's going to be the gift that keeps giving, right? It'll probably be more about, I saw Glenn Beck, you know, talking about how a proposed app by the Canadian government for easy vaccination validation for going across the border, how that's, it's going to be, you know, some Bill Gates 5G conspiracy thing about how they're tracking you. That'll be, you know, a thing that will probably get picked up on too. Trudeau, you know, well, there'll be more stuff about Trudeau, any image of any police officer doing anything wrong, which they should never do, regardless of who the victim is going to be put out there. And so you'll have, you know, Hunger Game-esque attempts at propaganda showing, you know, the evil federal government against the populist working class, the innocents, et cetera, that just want freedom over their body. And, you know, all these things are going to get spun out into these other narratives. And they're predictable because these narratives, they're not new, they're templates. And it's just a stamp, basically. Again, you know, whether we're talking about FEMA death camps under Obama or the United Nations, or you can go back as far as you want into anti-Semitism. But these narratives are all very similar, right? So kind of bringing this back into moving forward, you know, those are like the least important people, and they're going to make their money by going back to these templates and narratives that sell. You know, what's this going to do for the government? Well, as much as the Canadian government and the US government are going to say we're going to follow the science, they're not, they're politicians. And so you're probably going to see a loosening or lessening of COVID-related lockdown restrictions, mask mandates, you know, going out the window. It might start in places like bars and restaurants, but it'll eventually get to schools and places like that. The industries that will kind of be resistant to that will be the federal government and employees of the federal government. But unfortunately, what you're going to see is politicians react to headlines and to polls and not to science. At least that's a prediction. We'll see. It seems like that's already happening. And then, you know, what's going to happen with these employees, with these truckers? And I mean, this is the most important part, because really, I mean, politicians and social media people can whatever. And, you know, this will be interesting, an interesting topic moving forward, because we'll also probably see politically motivated, more transparently politically motivated iterations of this in the United States. And, you know, maybe there'll be something like this along the southern border too. But, you know, there is a group of people, right? Maybe in relation to the general population, statistically insignificant, but they're still individual humans who, every human is, you know, significant within their own humanity. And those are people that kind of get lost in all this. And this is what the CTA said as well. You know, at this point, the grifters have moved on, right? At this point, there are people that were at this protest that maybe, you know, went out of legitimate grievance, who felt like they were a part of a movement, who are now going through the legal process. You know, there are, you know, fathers and mothers who have kids and jobs, and they're screwed. I mean, this is what happened. This is what always happens. This is what happened with January 6th to, you know, more than a year later. The people who organized, although in this case, the organizers were arrested. But, you know, generally speaking, you get wrapped up in these things. And if you're not, you know, a part of one of these extremist organizations, or if you're not in that political party, if you don't have money, right, or if you don't have any sway or ties, you're the one that's going to get left in the dust. There are still people going through court cases related to what happened on January 6th. Do you think Trump cares about any of them? You think he's helping any of those people? You think Bannon, or you think any of the folks that were involved with that are helping the regular folks that are going through, you know, misdemeanor charges and felonies? And, you know, what's going to happen with a felony? You can't vote. That's going to be on your resume. You know, and the same with these folks that kind of, you know, maybe the people that genuinely got swept up in this as a movement. Well, you know, hopefully they didn't get arrested. Hopefully their employer didn't see them on TV, right? Hopefully they're able to go back and you know, return to normalcy. But what we do know is that if anything bad does happen to these people, you know, if they are on TV and their boss sees them, they say, hey, we don't, you know, we don't want that around here. Or they have a felony charge now, right? And maybe, hey, that maybe that's a condition of employment. Well, what we do know is that folks in the Maverick Party, in the People's Party, Yellow Vests, they're not going to help these folks. People in the Conservative Party, right? These are people that are going to get left behind. They're going to have to show up to their court cases. They're going to have to wear their leg monitor. They're going to have to do all the stuff that comes along with this while also being an adult and providing for their family and doing all the stuff that they wanted to do in the first place. I guess the last thing would be, you know, what does this mean for vaccination status? And that's really going to be the interesting thing moving forward. And that's what I'm going to be keeping my eye on. First of all, how is this even going to be enforced? Right. I mean, you know, our employers, what are the penalties going to be if someone just says, I'm not getting vaccinated? Do you get laid off? I mean, do you have like a certain period of time? Do you have a court case, you know, for this? Is this eventually going to be something where someone does get fired and then they bring it into the courts? You know, that'll be the interesting thing moving forward from that angle. Being objective, because I feel like there was a lot of bad or negative critique of this truck convoy, but I'm sorry, it's just being truthful. It is what it is. But likewise, it does seem like that there should be some accommodation, even though we understand from, you know, that quote earlier from medical professionals saying, well, you can't make an exemption for this group because then you have to make exemptions for every group. I get it. But it feels like maybe with rapid testing, with masks, with social distancing, it feels as if there should be something that could be done to accommodate, you know, this, whatever it is, 20% of people, so that they don't lose their jobs, right?